court will proceed to the fifth case, Milliken versus Astru. Mr. Schultz?
It pleases the court, Your Honors. Barry Schultz on behalf of the plaintiff, Patricia Milliken. This is a Social Security disability case. The plaintiff claims that the administrative law judge made three primary errors requiring reversal. First, the ALJ's analysis of the impact of fatigue on Ms. Milliken's ability to sustain work activity was woefully inadequate in this case. At page 64 of the administrative record, the ALJ's analysis of the impact of fatigue basically consists of two sentences in which the ALJ found that she found it interesting that the plaintiff did not mention fatigue when she saw her doctor right around the same time that plaintiff and her daughter testified the plaintiff was experiencing extreme fatigue. The problem with the ALJ's notation there is that the plaintiff went to see her doctor because she was having an exacerbation of problems with her legs, and she saw the doctor on two occasions because she was having more problems walking, was walking very stiff-legged, and that was the reason she went to see the doctor. There's no indication that the doctor asked her to describe all of the problems that she was having, nor would a person who's been having chronic fatigue for 10 years necessarily tell, or at that point 6 years, necessarily tell their doctor that they're still experiencing fatigue when they're there for a specific acute problem, which was a worsening of her walking.
What was the earliest MS diagnosis?
Well, it's actually not clear in the record. I mean, it clearly was diagnosed in 2005. There was discussion of her having multiple sclerosis previously, and there was an MRI of the brain in, I believe, 1997, which indicated there were the plaques in the white brain matter, which are consistent with multiple sclerosis. In 1999, the neurologist at Mayo Clinic said that he didn't believe that her MS was active at that time. He didn't say that she didn't have MS, so it's a little unclear as to the exact date of the diagnosis. And in this case, the ALJ acknowledged that the plaintiff also suffered from depression and said that fatigue was the primary manifestation of her depression. Yet, and as noted, the ALJ only included these two sentences of an analysis, and the record, I believe we pointed out in our brief, that there were at least 10 complaints of significant fatigue to her treating doctors prior to the expiration of her insured status, as well as her testimony and her daughter's testimony that she basically slept most of the time. I think it was pretty compelling testimony because her daughter was on bed rest due to a difficult pregnancy, and Ms. Milliken would go there to spend time with her daughter, but all she could do would maybe get her a glass of water, literally, and the testimony was that the two of them would lay down together or just be laying around together, and Ms. Milliken was keeping her daughter company, but she couldn't really help her at all given how fatigued she was at that time. In addition, previously a sleep study had confirmed that Ms. Milliken actually suffered from some sleep apnea, and the study was done because of excessive daytime drowsiness. Now, also, the ALJ in this case failed to properly consider the plaintiff's residual functional capacity in that at step two she found the plaintiff suffered from severe depression, and at step three she found that the plaintiff had moderate limitations in concentration, persistence, and pace. But then in her residual functional capacity finding, the ALJ doesn't include any limitations based on concentration, persistence, and pace. And she doesn't include any explanation as to why, despite having just found such a limitation, that she now was not including any such limitation. This court, in several cases, the Stewart versus Astru case and Kraft versus Astru, Kosarski versus Barnhart and Young versus Barnhart, has held that limitations even to such things as simple unskilled work or routine work don't adequately take into consideration limitations in concentration, persistence, and pace. But this case is even more compelling for reversal because the ALJ doesn't include any limitations in the residual functional capacity that relate to the plaintiff's depression. Now, the commissioner argues that the ALJ relied on the medical expert's opinion that the plaintiff could sustain unskilled work. But if you look at the medical expert's testimony in this case, first he says that the plaintiff is limited in her social interaction, and that at best she could have very casual relations or contact with supervisors and coworkers. He then says that she's limited in concentration, persistence, and pace, although probably more so due to the multiple sclerosis than due to the depression. The ALJ then asks a separate question, which is, do you believe that Ms. Milliken could sustain unskilled work activity? And the medical expert says, yes, from a psychiatric perspective, I believe she could. But at no time does he negate or retract his previous testimony that she suffered from distinct limitations due to her impairments.
That ME was regarding her depression, right?
That's correct.
Not the physical impairment, the MS and
That's correct.
Other matters.
That's correct. So while he commented that he thought some of her limitations from the MS were greater than the limitations from depression, he limited his specific testimony to her depression and the limitations from the depression. So the vocational expert in this case testified that all three jobs that she mentioned that Ms. Milliken maybe could perform were production jobs that required maintaining a rate. So, again, given the ALJ's finding that there were moderate limitations in concentration, persistence, and pace, she should have, at a minimum, have explained how a person with those types of limitations could sustain jobs that required maintaining a production rate.
Wasn't the VE present during the testimony of the ME so that the VE would have heard about those limitations?
Yes, the VE was present and did hear the medical expert's testimony, but I believe this case is similar to what was set out in the Young case in that the vocational expert testified to a series of hypothetical questions with specific limitations, and it certainly appears like she was addressing those specific limitations. And actually, that gets into the next issue, which is that of the social interaction, because the ALJ asked the vocational expert specifically, would a limitation to casual contact with supervisors and coworkers impact the plaintiff's ability to perform the jobs? The vocational expert answered by saying that she didn't know what casual contact meant. And the ALJ, rather than clarifying what the doctor meant by that statement, she said, well, let's translate that into occasional contact. But occasional contact and casual contact are not the same thing. Occasional contact goes to how frequent you're having contact with someone, whereas casual contact goes to the nature of that contact. And a person certainly could have contact with a supervisor once a day that's not casual. And the ALJ failed to discuss the social limitations. She didn't discuss the vocational expert's testimony or Dr. Kuhl's testimony. Yes. Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Pedersen?
May it please the Court, Counsel. Danielle Pedersen on behalf of the Commissioner of Social Security. I'd like to answer a question that Judge Tinder asked during opposing counsel's argument. If we look at the evidence prior to the March 2002 date last insured, which is of great importance in this case, you'll see that when she went to the Mayo Clinic in December of 1999, testing for multiple sclerosis was specifically negative. The neurologist, I believe it was Dr. Dobb, that saw her at that time, indicated that there was no objective evidence of active or residual multiple sclerosis. The remainder of the evidence predating the date last insured focuses on Ms. Milliken's chronic pain complaints, and there is no additional mention of significant symptoms that are related to or tied to multiple sclerosis.
Chronic pain and fatigue are significant MS symptoms, though, aren't they?
That is true, Your Honor. That is absolutely true. The ALJ in this case did look very carefully at the evidence surrounding that March 2002 date last insured about the issue of fatigue, because that was the symptom that Ms. Milliken testified was the most debilitating at the time that that insured status expired. Now, opposing counsel has referred this court to a statement that the ALJ made during her recitation of the facts, where she did note that there were no contemporaneous reports of fatigue. Now, that is true. The ALJ did make that statement, and that is supported by the record. If you look around the time that Ms. Milliken's insured status expired, you'll see that in November 2000, she reported a normal activity level. And in January 2002, just a few months shy of that date last insured, she reported no daytime somnolence or sleepiness during the day. The reports of fatigue, there are a few of them predating the date last insured. The district court notes them in that decision. You'll notice they are very sporadic, and they are spread out over a long period of time, ranging from 1994 to 1999. It is something she does occasionally mention. She does mention being fatigued. At no time, however, does she report debilitating symptoms of fatigue, and she certainly never states that the fatigue is so severe that it interferes with her ability to concentrate.
There are reports, are there not, though, Ms. Pedersen, from 02, medical reports indicating a concern about fatigue.
I'm glad you brought that one up, Your Honor. There was a report in after the date last insured in August of 2002 where she reported that she had been fatigued. But the most important thing about that note was that she had gone in because she had not been compliant with her diabetic diet and medication regimen. And she went in and admitted, I have not been taking my medication, I have not been following my diabetic diet, and I'm feeling very fatigued. That, again, was after the date last insured, and that complaint, that symptom, was directly tied to the fact that she had not been compliant with treatment. Again, prior to the date last insured, there are only sporadic, occasional mentions of fatigue, and the ALJ properly observed that there were no complaints of severe debilitating fatigue right before and certainly not surrounding the date last insured. I'd like, though, to take issue with something opposing counsel said. Opposing counsel made it seem as though that one statement that I have been talking about was the entirety of the ALJ's credibility analysis. That is simply not the case. Several pages after that statement, the ALJ engages in a multi-page assessment of Ms. Milliken's credibility, including her complaints of disabling fatigue. The ALJ specifically notes that there is a clear line of demarcation that Ms. Milliken herself denotes between the symptoms she was experiencing prior to a 2005 MS flare-up and the symptoms that she was experiencing after. Ms. Milliken, by her own account, both to her physicians and in her testimony, stated that prior to that 2005 exacerbation, which was long after the date last insured, she was reading on a daily basis, she was engaging in an exercise program. In fact, she was doing very rigorous, by her own statements, exercise when she experienced the 2005 exacerbation. In 2004, she tells a doctor that the symptoms she's having, the very severe symptoms that eventually were diagnosed as multiple sclerosis after the big exacerbation, she says in February 2004, it was really about a year ago, would have been February 2003, that I started having these significant symptoms, and around that time I was visiting Europe. She was on vacation in Europe, and she was pulling heavy luggage by her own account. That was in February 2003, again, well after the date last insured here. The ALJ did not just look at her own complaints. The ALJ looked at other evidence in the record, noting that many of the symptoms that she had experienced, such as using a cane because she was so fatigued she could not walk, some of the mood swings that she was experiencing, and these other symptoms did not occur until after the 2005 exacerbation. So I'd like you to note that the ALJ's decision does contain a detailed credibility assessment. That one statement that the ALJ makes, which nonetheless is supported by the record, is a statement made during her recitation of the facts. I'd like to talk a little bit about the mental impairments in this situation. Ms. Milliken has not identified any error by the ALJ that would warrant a remand in this case. The ALJ properly relied on the opinion of a medical expert that despite concentration, persistence, and pace difficulties, Ms. Milliken could nonetheless perform unskilled work. Now, Ms. Milliken takes great pains in the main brief and the reply brief to point out a lot of these cases that she feels are analogous, Stewart, Kraft, Kaczarski, and Young. These cases are not analogous to the case at hand for one very important reason. In none of those cases did the ALJ have a medical opinion stating that here are the limitations, and from those limitations, I find she can do this type of work. That connection, that bridge that this court finds so important was lacking in those cases. This case is, on the other hand, much more analogous to cases such as Johansson, Jens, Arnold, and I think most recently and most importantly, Simula. In that case, this court found that where a medical expert or a doctor has opined that moderate, and in that case it was often, I believe, because the regulations changed, but often deficiencies is the same thing as moderate under our scheme, that those that degree of difficulty can be accommodated by a limitation to unskilled work. Actually, in Simula it was semi-skilled work. There has not been any case by this court to draw a bright line that Ms. Milliken seems to be suggesting would be appropriate. This court has never held that moderate concentration difficulties can never be accounted for by a short and sweet RFC for, say, unskilled work or semi-skilled work. In fact, like I said, in Jens and Arnold and Simula, the court has held just the opposite. There is no bright line rule. This court looks at the individual factors of each case, and in cases like the one before you, where there has been a medical opinion that the ALJ specifically adopted, where that medical expert said there are these limitations and I'm converting those limitations into an RFC for this type of work, in our case unskilled, universally this court has found that that is sufficient, that is substantial evidence to support the ALJ's decision. The ALJ did not include the unskilled limitation in her RFC. However, she specifically relied only on the unskilled jobs that were identified by the vocational expert. The ALJ also, in her decision, specifically adopts the opinion of the medical expert that Ms. Milliken can do unskilled work. If you read her decision as a whole, as this court has indicated that it will, you will see that the ALJ did adopt that finding and did only rely on unskilled jobs to find that Ms. Milliken could perform a substantial number of jobs. Now, as to the limitations in concentration, persistence, and in the social functioning, again, the ALJ did not put any limitations in the RFC itself relating to social functioning difficulties. However, again, the ALJ did not actually find that there were any limitations in social functioning. What the ALJ did was at the hearing gave great deference to the testimony of Dr. Cools, the medical expert, and nonetheless included those limitations in the hypothetical question to the VE. Now, opposing counsel wants to indicate that casual and occasional are not the same thing. Again, I think that we have to decide if the ALJ's interpretation was reasonable. None of us should be substituting our judgment for that of the medical expert. The medical expert was present at the hearing. There's no evidence that he left the courtroom after giving his testimony. We went directly into the vocational expert's testimony. He was sitting there in the courtroom, presumably. He did not take issue with the ALJ's conversion of that limit into one of occasional contact. And again, plaintiff, who was represented by counsel, did not cross-examine the VE on that issue at all. There was very short cross-examination, and that discrepancy did not come up. Had there been a desire at the time to clarify whether that, what the ALJ said, adequately accounted for what the ME said, there was ample opportunity to do that at the hearing, and it was not done.
And there was cross-examination of the ME, right?
Yes, there was. There was cross-examination of the ME and the VE, but again, this specific issue was not brought up. This is something that was not raised until the briefs were filed in the district court. For all these reasons, we would ask that you affirm the commissioner's decision in this case.
Thank you, Ms. Pedersen.
Thank you.
Mr. Schultz.
In Social Security ruling 8515, which was not addressed by this court in the similar case but was addressed in the Kraft case, the Commissioner of Social Security says, because the response to the demands of work is highly individualized, the skill level of a position is not necessarily related to the difficulty the individual have in meeting the demands of that job, noting that a claimant's condition may make the performance of an unskilled job as objectively difficult as a more demanding job. And in this case, a limitation to unskilled work then doesn't take into consideration limitations from mental impairments. The medical expert is a medical expert. He's not a vocational expert. There's no evidence that he knows what is entailed in unskilled work. And, in fact, the definition of unskilled work in the Dictionary of Occupational Titles is a job that can be learned within 30 days. It doesn't deal with productivity or other issues like that. In addition, in this case, the claimant's attorney didn't have to cross-examine the vocational expert on the one issue of social limitations because the vocational expert said, well, what's important here is the ability to be able to respond appropriately to supervisors. And the medical expert had already said that Ms. Milliken could only respond to supervisors and coworkers on a very casual basis. And so there was already enough information that the ALJ should have found limitations in that area. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Pedersen. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will take a short recess.